This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Thursday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Technology Thursday, we'll find out about some of the potential cures and treatments for coronavirus that are being developed. Right now, a record number of people across the area filing for unemployment benefits, many of them for the very first time. And what we've been doing throughout the day is asking you to send in your unemployment questions via the WBBM Facebook page. We want to ask some of your questions now to attorney Jeff Jacobson. Jeff is an attorney at the law offices of Jeffrey Jacobson in Wheaton. He's also a former administrative law judge for the Illinois Department of Employment Security. Jeff, really appreciate you being with us here. Right off the bat, one of the questions that we've been getting a lot is a question about terminology and what sort of benefits are available depending on your status, because you have some people who are just flat out being laid off. You have some people who are being furloughed. And unless you're in the trades or some sort of seasonal business, you're not really used to that term. Can you help us to understand the difference in being laid off and being furloughed?
Absolutely. And thanks for having me on there. It's an honor to be on. So from the state of Illinois, there's technical terms like severance. All that matters is the wages has been reduced. A substantial reduction in wages is all that matters. So we don't have to worry with the terminology for people. Just if their check has become smaller or non-existent, they should file for unemployment benefits if they were an employee.
So it really comes down to how much money you're making now as opposed to what you were making a week ago.
Absolutely. Unemployment was designed to help people pay rent and the necessities in life. So the concern is, are you making less? And it has to be significantly less, obviously.
When it comes to how much people are going to make, I know there may be a difference now that this bill has passed Congress versus what maybe they would have gotten paid if they'd been laid off or furloughed a few months ago. Any idea what sort of percentage of pay people can expect to get on unemployment?
So the percentage has always, what I've always told people, it's about two-thirds of what you were making. There's caps. There's actually a table. People can go to either my website or IDES, and it's a benefits table that'll have the number. You'll also get extra money if you have a non-working spouse and you have dependent children. The federal act, now the CARES Act, will increase that by $600.
That $600 is something that actually one of the questions that came in via Facebook was about the $600, specifically someone who was already getting benefits. They're wondering if they were already on unemployment, already laid off. This is someone in the building trades. Will they get that $600 or will they just be stuck at what they were before?
No. So the answer is that there's two parts to it because I want to make sure people understand. So if you were receiving unemployment benefits and your unemployment benefits have expired, you will no longer be getting additional unemployment benefits unless they change the bill. However, if you're currently receiving unemployment benefits, it will then increase by the $600. So you will receive an additional amount.
Okay, we have more questions for Jeffrey Jacobson, an attorney at the law offices of Jeffrey Jacobson. He's also a former administrative law judge for the Illinois Department of Employment Security. We're going to ask them how this impacts gig workers. If you get laid off from one job but not another, can you get benefits? And also, what sort of information, what paperwork do you need as you go online to file for unemployment? That and more of your questions with Jeff Jacobson in just moments. Now, more of your questions. Attorney Jeff Jacobson is joining us. He's a former administrative law judge judge for the Illinois Department of Employment Security. On Facebook throughout the day, we've been gathering your questions about unemployment, the process, the benefits, and all of that. And we've been asking Jeff these questions. We want to talk about the gig economy here, Jeff, because we have certainly moved into that. A lot of people working two, three, four different jobs. What happens if they get laid off from one of those jobs? Are they able to get any sort of benefits?
So, yeah, so here's how it works. I get this question a lot. I actually deal with NABIT 41 unions. So it's based on whether your wages is reduced. So if you get laid off from one job, a gig worker, you can file for unemployment benefits. However, you have to claim the amount of wages you receive. So when you file for unemployment, you'll get benefits for that. But during the two-week period, if you receive wages from other companies, that will reduce the amount you receive. And you're entitled to, this is one of the things that's interesting, you're entitled to keep wages that are 50% of what your weekly benefit amount is. So if you get, let's say, for unemployment, $500 a week, you're allowed to make wages of $250 a week without reducing your unemployment benefits. I also want to point out for businesses, from employers that have thin margins, this may seem like a good thing right now. Their employees are laid off, they're receiving benefits, they'll come back to work. And then when everyone comes back to work, things will seem okay. And then next year, the federal unemployment and state unemployment taxes will increase for the employer because the number of claims that are being made for that employer. So now all of a sudden, that employer is going to get hit with a higher tax rate for at least 3 years to recoup all the money that was spent. I'm hoping Congress corrects that mistake.
Yeah, you talk about taxes too. Is it important to mention these unemployment benefits in regard to taxes? Are these taxable benefits for the people who are receiving them?
So they are. It's considered income. They can option when they apply to have the taxes taken out of their unemployment check right away. That's something they'll need to talk to their accountant about. But yes, they're taxable income.
Your answers here seem to focus on the amount of money that people are bringing in. I think a lot of times people are concerned with their employment status, but it really sounds like it's about the amount of money, because the reason I'm asking is one of the listeners had a question about self-employed people. If they're losing all of their clients, but they're not technically laid off because they are their own employee, can they get benefits?
So under the CARES Act, they will be entitled to. I'm hoping by Friday the state of Illinois will have the ability to take applications for that. So if you're an independent contractor, and because of the COVID-19, you will get benefits. It's just a matter of the state getting up online for the filing.
For many people, this will be the first time that they've ever applied for unemployment. Obviously, there's nerves, anxiety, confusion about the process. What do they need? When they go online, they're going to need some sort of documentation. What do they need?
So they don't need any documentation. It's pretty much information about themselves. They'll need the Social Security of their spouses if they're not working and their dependent children. They'll need information about the employer. But as far as wages, the state of Illinois already has that information. All the states do. So they won't need any documents. Then there's a process. It'll take about a week. They'll get a letter. If they requested a debit card, they'll get the debit card in the mail. And then it'll give them days that they can call in. You have to call in every 2 weeks to certify you're still unemployed as well as any wages you made.
How long do those benefits usually last, say, if someone is not able to get further employment?
That's a good question. So the state of Illinois lasts 26 weeks, but the federal government has kicked in a longer period of time, and that may increase as COVID-19 continues.
Really good insight. Appreciate you being with us very much. Great information. Jeff Jacobson, he is an attorney at the law offices of Jeffrey Jacobson in Wheaton. He's also a former administrative law judge for the Illinois Department of Employment Security. Thank you for all of those great questions sent in via the WBBM Facebook page. Just ahead, U.S. cases of coronavirus have now topped 217,000. We'll have the latest next as the Noon Business Hour continues.
Cashing in with Conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
COVID-19 continues its fast spread across the U.S. and all around the world. Joining us with the latest, Michelle Cortez, health reporter at Bloomberg News, based in Minneapolis. Michelle, in New York, is that still the hot spot, or can we really just narrow it down to one hot spot these days?
Well, New York is still the hot spot. They still definitely have the most cases and the most deaths coming in, but we are definitely seeing accelerating exponential spread in other parts of the country. And at this point, no one is going to be spared.
Now, why is it, we've heard the next couple of weeks are going to probably be the roughest and the most deadly. Why is that, especially with the social distancing that has been going on?
You know, it takes a little bit of time in order for the social distancing to have an effect. We are seeing some of that, actually, that the rates of increase, we're still seeing more patients being diagnosed every day. And of course, it's not like you diagnose one day and you're fine the next. So those are adding on top of each other. But the increase is growing at a slower rate. The thing is that the severe cases and the deaths follow the cases. So even if we get the number of cases under control, the number of people who are going to be hospitalized, severely ill and dying, that's going to be coming on the back end. And we're looking at this for weeks of new cases and months of deaths and hospitalizations.
So is that where hopefully the social distancing can slow some of that down so that there's enough hospital beds for all the people who are going to need them?
Exactly. Enough hospital beds, and hopefully that everybody that people who otherwise wouldn't have care and who would die from having exposure to this virus might actually get the kind of treatment that they need and be able to make it through. We are seeing a lot of younger people who have no idea that they're going to be at risk landing in the hospital.
Found it interesting. The government confiscated a bunch of PPE, the personal protective equipment, from price gougers. Now they're distributing them. So at least those things aren't going to go to waste and just sit in some warehouse.
I know. It's interesting. I don't know what exactly those folks were thinking. I suppose early on, if you were able to scoop up a whole bunch of stuff, you might have been able to do something with it in the beginning. But now that this is such a widely recognized huge public health issue, anyone trying to take advantage of Americans or people anywhere in the world, not only is there the social pariah situation and everybody angry at you, but now you have the FBI coming for you. So really not a good choice.
Yeah, they are definitely paying attention. Thank you so much. Michelle Cortez, health reporter at Bloomberg News. Just ahead, a double dose of Technology Thursday, how tech companies are stepping up in the fight against the coronavirus pandemic. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A Chicago police officer has died from coronavirus. Americans apply for unemployment in record numbers for the second week in a row. Stocks trading higher today on Wall Street. The Dow up 67. They are off their highs for the day. The NASDAQ is up 18 and the S&P up 14 points. Oil is the big winner today. It is up 21.5% back in the $24 range. Sunshine in Chicagoland throughout your day. High of 58. Right now 56 at O'Hare, but just 42 degrees along Chicago's lakefront. A 21-year veteran of the Chicago Police Department has died of complications of coronavirus. The officer, Marco DeFranco, worked in the department's narcotics division. Mayor Lightfoot says his death once again stresses the importance of staying at home.
We need to be clear-eyed that, as we have been saying, unfortunately, these numbers will worsen before they improve. That is why every single day, you will hear me say that we have to stay home to save lives. What each of us does, what you do, matters. Every time you go outside, it matters.
City officials say the officer contracted the disease last week and was hospitalized over the weekend. He is survived by his wife and two children, ages 7 and 10. Another employee of the Cook County Circuit Court is tested positive for the virus. The employee works for the Social Service Department on the lower level of the Daly Center, last reported for work on March 18th. There are now 6 confirmed cases among employees of the court system. The face of President Trump's coronavirus task force getting some additional protection. CBS News has confirmed Dr. Anthony Fauci will get his own security detail following threats to his safety. Correspondent Paula Reed following the latest.
Security was enhanced at the request of the Health and Human Services Inspector General. The U.S. Marshals were asked to deputize a group of agents who work inside the Health and Human Services Inspector General to handle Fauci's protection. That request was taken to the Justice Department's headquarters, where it was ultimately approved.
Officials did not expand on the nature of the threats or provide details on the extent of physical protection Dr. Fauci will receive. If you're among the many now working from home, ask your smart speaker to play WBBM News Radio for all the latest developments. WBBM News Time, 12:33.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Markets were up well over 400 points at one point today. Now they've scaled back a little bit. The Dow up 89, NASDAQ up 21, and the S&P up 16. Let's talk about it with Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors here in Chicago. Susan, what do you make of, a bit of a roller coaster today?
A bit of a roller coaster. It's nice to see the green. So we did have a negative day yesterday to have a little bit of a snapback here. Not unusual. I think the biggest news in the market today certainly is the price of oil and how much that has changed. So that's giving a lift overall to the market. And no surprise, energy is the leading sector.
Yeah, as we see this up 21% on oil today. What's going on? What's behind this?
Well, we've had two different things there support that. So initially, we have a story out that China is going to increase their strategic oil reserves. So that means there's going to be a big buyer in the market. So that's pushing up the price. And then backing that up, we had President Trump make a comment that he has spoken with Saudi Arabia and that they are speaking with Russia. Remember that those are the two key players in this, and we need to cut production in order to have the price of oil come back up. So the fact that those two are speaking and President Trump thinks they're going to come to an agreement where production will be cut, that is causing that tailwind for oil today.
Get a lot of people who would like the volatility to go away. They just, I guess, sort of want to get back to the normal that we had in a nice bull market, but the volatility will probably be around for a while.
That is very true, Cisco. This is the new norm. So be prepared, folks. I don't think this is going to change. We've got a lot of volatility, and we really were spoiled because for a long time, we saw very little volatility in the market, which isn't normal. That long, slow, steady recovery that we had been in got accompanied by very limited volatility for the stock market. These moves clearly are a little more violent than we would like, but we are going back to more up and down days. We're seeing some big swings, and that just shows you how emotional this market can be.
So for an investor who is in it for the long run, maybe it's someone thinking about retirement, is there anything that they should do differently during a time like this?
I don't think so. I think being in it for the long run is the best way to approach this market and keep your sanity. You can't plan day to day. This is certainly not a market that even professional short-term traders are trying to tackle because there is so much variability in what's happening. And so this is a market that gives you opportunity to take advantage of stock price dislocations. We are seeing things that are obviously down a lot from where they were 2 months ago, but also good companies that are being punished and that you can see have a great 3-5 year, even 10-year horizon. So find those companies that you really like, find the business models that you believe in, and take this as an opportunity. Remember that in 2008, 2009, it was very scary, but the people who were able to step up and invest and had conviction in their ideas, most of them came through that and years later, granted, I said years, not months. Years later, we're very pleased with that exposure to the market because the market responded well post that crisis. We don't know where the bottom is. We know this is a rocky territory, so keep that long-term view and pick your spots.
Is there a sector that is maybe better positioned to weather this storm, or pretty much everything going to get hit and continued with the volatility?
You know, with this, what's interesting is every sector has been punished. There hasn't been a move in one sector versus the others where you've seen excessive downtrend. We saw that initially, and obviously you have a few like cruise lines, airlines, et cetera, that are working through issues. They're very capital-heavy businesses that depend on people being out and about. So those are industries that we've seen be in the news a lot. Those clearly got hurt. But overall, this has been a risk-off event. People have been selling out of their positions, and that's where we've seen the pressure in the market. People just want to get out of the way and convert to cash. That's where we've seen the opportunity is really across all sectors because it hasn't been a choosy sell. It has been just take me to the sidelines for now. So you have opportunity, I think, in almost every sector if you go back in and start, you know, combing through what's there.
Thanks so much. Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors. Up next, Technology Thursday, a look at the race to find treatment options and maybe even a cure for COVID-19.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Technology Thursday on the Noon Business Hour. Companies big and small are pivoting to join the fight to develop treatments and eventually a vaccine for the coronavirus. Joining us with the latest, Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show. Paul, let's begin with what some manufacturers are doing, specifically Ford, GE. You have GM that is getting in on this as well, trying to produce important medical equipment.
That's exactly right. I mean, I think the subject for this entire conversation, obviously, is desperation, right? Because people are trying very hard to, for economic reasons as well as obviously health reasons, come up with solutions fast for all the challenges, including, you know, complete lack of N95 quality masks for doctors, lack of ventilators, you name it. And the teaming up is unconventional, to say the least. But give you an example, Ford Motor Company and GE Healthcare are planning, they say, to create 50,000 ventilators in the next 100 days in Michigan at a plant that was that's basically being repurposed. Now, the GE Healthcare is the sort of healthcare side of the whole process, and Ford obviously is the manufacturing side. But what they're doing is they're taking, you know, GE Healthcare's knowledge and Ford's manufacturing capabilities and merging them fast. And it's quite amazing when you think about it. Again, the goal, and they say it's realistic, is 50,000 ventilators in 3 months. So that's something that didn't exist before that will by roughly June.
So, but that, I mean, it sounds like what they're addressing, as you're describing in here, is something a few weeks ago people were saying, why can't we just make more ventilators? Why can't Ford or GM or whatever, why can't they just make these pieces of equipment without the knowledge, the expertise in how these things are made, and without the raw materials? It's not like overnight you can just turn an auto manufacturing plant into a ventilator manufacturing plant.
You know what's interesting is, first of all, that's absolutely correct. Of course, you can't overnight do something like that. However, it is and people are looking at wartime analogies, right? World War II in particular. And there were, speaking of Ford Motor Company, was turning out a B-24 bomber every hour by the time the height of manufacturing switchover had happened. In other words, now this took months, but what they did was they literally took, an automobile plant and turned it into an aircraft manufacturing plant. Now, there are challenges that didn't exist then that do now, and vice versa. So it's not a fair apples-to-apples comparison. But the fact is, when motivated, major manufacturing can, if they're, especially if they're good, like Ford is and a number of others, they look at what those shared, sort of basically shared processes are, where the overlap essentially is in making cars and making ventilators, and they apply their knowledge fast. It's sort of not unlike not apocryphal, real movie, Apollo 13, when all the scientists assembled what amounts to an air filter to save the astronauts by figuring out what was in the actual airship itself. So it can be done, but it's a struggle.
And there is, sometimes people can feel like it's crass, but the market incentive, the fact that if someone is able to produce these ventilators, other personal protective equipment, other things that are needed during this time, even hand sanitizer, it can be a lifeline to some businesses that otherwise would be completely shuttered during this time.
Oh, that's exactly right. I mean, it is a business is big and small. To your point, the business solution here is actually going to make some people some money. So, you're not being crass. I mean, it's not a crass statement. It's a fact that there are going to be companies that are getting into building masks that were in the fabric development. Some of them doing for humanitarian reasons. In other words, there are fashion companies right now who have repurposed their sewing facilities, obviously a very different challenge, but to create masks for frontline medical workers who don't have them. It can be done. It's done in small and large ways. Obviously, the Ford and GE healthcare partnership is going to be massive, and it's an incredibly technically complicated device, this ventilator. But apparently, smaller companies are figuring out ways to do it too. So we'll see how this turns out.
We have more with Paul Hochman in just moments. A double dose of Technology Thursday here. Paul is president of Humongous Media. Conversation about antibodies and how they may help in the fight against coronavirus. That's next.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Let's continue our conversation on Technology Thursday about the race to develop treatments and eventually a vaccine for coronavirus. We're talking with Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor of the Today Show. Paul, let's talk about antibodies, something I think a lot of people aren't even familiar with, maybe not sure what that term means. Give us kind of a layman's view here of what they are in the race to actually get some effective ones out there.
Sure. Antibodies basically are effectively the body's defense against invaders. So your body naturally produces them. Every day, every human being walks around with lots of bacteria, lots of viruses in them that actually help. But some of those obviously hurt. And the body produces defenses, white blood cells, is generally the case, and antibodies specifically to block whatever is coming in, basically, or attack whatever is coming in. In the case of, like, every single invader has a different shape, and good antibodies block that shape from before it connects with your cells. So in this case, coronavirus has a particular shape. Many people have seen the art. It looks sort of like a crown, hence the name corona. And essentially, this is the magic of all this, if there is magic, that the body creates things to match what has just invaded it. So it happens that since there are millions of coronavirus sufferers and patients, many of whom who have recovered, the reason they have recovered is because they produced antibodies to attack. Guess what? Since they are now essentially immune once they've created those antibodies, if you grab those antibodies, in other words, get a blood sample, and either create more of them or develop basically what amounts to a vaccine, you have things that can be injected into a healthy patient who then will have the antibodies necessary to fight off that coronavirus. Long explanation, but in essence, a whole bunch of Chinese and American scientists have found extremely effective antibodies that literally block the virus from entering human cells. So
no,
that's the good news.
And that's a really good explanation, I think, because people are wondering what science can do. They're thinking pills often, that sort of a thing. But there may be other things that they can do, like what you're talking about.
Yeah, human beings are essentially antibody factories. We create, and think of it as a puzzle piece. If you haven't taken biology, and I took very little, but think of it as a puzzle piece. The actual coronavirus is a puzzle piece that fits with the human cell. And if you can get something to fit with the coronavirus before it gets to your cell, well, basically the antibody blocks that coronavirus from attaching to your cell. And, eureka. Now, this is going to take 6 months before we can get this thing out at fastest, mass produced for testing. But guess what? That's about a year and a half faster than normal. So that's why there's some hope.
Love seeing the 3D printed ventilators, seeing face shields being made. You really do have entrepreneurs stepping up here.
Oh, you know what? What's so interesting, I'm glad you brought that up, because we're talking about, science and do we need a drug, or actually we need the human body? But before any of that can happen, as you just pointed out, the medical professionals, who are true heroes in this, they are literally the frontline troops in this. They need equipment. And entrepreneurs are doing things like, one of the things, the challenges with ventilators is there is a piece that must be replaced every time a new patient begins to use the ventilator for obvious, sort of sanitary reasons. Well, those are in short supply. Guess what? There is actually a Facebook group now called Open Source COVID-19 Medical Supplies. An entrepreneur put it together to open source 3D printing instructions for that piece that needs to be replaced. So there are literally millions of people around the globe, entrepreneurs, creating pieces, face shields, gloves, ventilators, and so forth, and ventilator equipment that didn't exist 6 weeks ago. And they are now literally sharing information and launching these products and product development so that everybody can get access to them.
It has been really fascinating to watch people step up now and really get inventive. Thank you. Good information from Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, the replay podcast available shortly on the radio.com app.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.